The Change Your POV podcast and all the shows within its network are working together to bring you the best coaches, entrepreneurs, business leaders, and mentors in every industry to teach you guys how to crush it in life, love, wellness, and your transitions both at home and at work. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors teaching you their expertise, packing decades of research, experience, education, testing, and tough lessons into a concise curriculum. We've created the premier veteran transitional podcast anywhere. This is the show we wish we had 15 years ago. Now, this show is about you, and we are here to help you become just as successful out of uniform as you were when you were in.
Well, hello, Dwayne, France, who gets up at 5 a.m. Oh, you can't hear me yet. Hello.
Hello. It's actually 6.
It's 6 a.m.?
6 a.m.
Wow.
Sorry I'm late to the party.
No, we're glad that you're here.
You're right on time, actually.
Yeah. I've been up since 3. It's amazing. The earlier I wake up, the harder it is to get to places on time. No, I was just finishing the editing for this week's show, and I was trying to rush to get everything done because, you know, what we do, we get paid for it. It has to be absolutely perfect.
That's right. Absolutely right. Yeah.
Jesus, you're a fucking ray of sunshine this morning, Dwayne.
I'm trying to warm up to the topic.
Yeah, well, not a good topic, but I think fucking people need to hear more of it from people who actually care about it one way or the other from a position of using their brains instead of their friggin'.
So who's gonna edit this, and which show is it gonna release on?
Well, I think it's a network show, so I think it should be your decision, Eddie.
Well, I mean, it don't really matter, really. It was your idea, wasn't it?
It was my suggestion.
Yeah. So,
but I suggested it something I thought would bring up, like, as a network kind of thing. So I didn't have an intent for it to be on my show.
You want to edit it, Bennett?
I can edit it, and we'll release it as a Change Your POV.
Okay,
we can do that. Could we run it on Monday or a Monday?
Demotivation Monday.
Motivation Monday. Let's talk about school shootings and gun control.
Piss some people off.
Yeah, that gets them motivated, though.
All right.
There's nothing like some controversial shit, though, to get people to come listen to your show. I realized that with that friggin' soft rap thing.
All right, I'm going to kick off the show, and then everyone introduce themselves and the show that they're on in the order that we release every week. Are we ready?
You a little sick, Eddie? You all right?
A little bit. I'm a little sick, but I'll live. Hello, folks. Welcome to Change Your POV Podcast Network. I am your host, Eddie Lazary, host of Change Your POV Podcast.
I am Bennett Tanton, host of everything else. No, Change Your Motive, Change Your POV Podcast, Attack Friday, and Motivation Monday.
I'm Dwayne France. I am the host of Headspace and Timing.
I'm Jeff Fadimick. I'm the host of Changing Hearts and Minds.
I'm Andrew McDowell. I'm the host of The Neophyte in the Woods.
And today we're sitting down for a very rare conglomerate shit show of all of us, talking about something that's, well, quite frankly, very current in the news, especially right now, and that is...
Are we talking about Agent Orange?
We're talking about gun control. Yay! So, Jeff, this was your idea to kind of get everybody together and talk about...
Oh, fuck you, Eddie.
It
fuck
was.
You very
I'm
much.
Throwing your ass under the bus.
It is again. He said, it's his suggestion.
Yeah, it's your suggestion, and we all
agree. No, it was my idea. It was my idea. It's a... honest to God, man, there's been so much conjecture and just massive amounts of bullshit that have been put out on media, as everyone knows. Everyone sees it all the time. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to sit down with guys from the veteran point of view, guys who generally have a positive feeling and like guns and like the Second Amendment, and talk about what's going on in the schools, what's going on with guns, and what's going on with this movement to get guns, you know, whether or not they're trying to get them banned completely or just get gun control, because I have very altering views on certain things about it. But I also made sure that I did a bunch of stuff for prep today, and I got a bunch of actual sourcing of real information to put out when we get to it.
Okay.
And then, I wanted to bring Neophyte in the Woods on just because I don't, he's the one non-veteran. So we have a non-veteran. We've got guys with different views from, who are veterans, and I just wanted us to sit down and talk about it.
Yeah, but Andrew loves guns.
I'm literally cleaning a gun right now.
Talk about irony. Define irony. Cleaning a gun while discussing gun control.
And I guess we figured out what side of the argument he's going to be on.
And cleaning a gun in Massachusetts on top of that.
Behind the Iron Curtain.
So I'm a guy that I have a 22 rifle, and a very small pistol of a very small caliber that I got from my wife back in the day. That I think we've only fired once. Like I am not an incredibly huge fan of guns. Let me say that better. It's not that I don't like guns. It's just that I'm not a gun fanatic, I guess. You know what I mean? I'm not the guy that retires out of the army and, you know, builds an AR and has a gazillion weapons, and like there's nothing wrong with that, but I for whatever reason just was never interested in doing any of that.
And you're not gonna run around concealed carried either.
No, not that I haven't considered it, but I've been like, because I used to work in corrections, right? I was a corrections officer. And there's a lot of corrections officers that would conceal carry. And I asked them, I was like, why do you feel the need to conceal carry? And a lot of people are like, well, it's because it's my right. I'm like, no, I get that. But I mean, why? What's the reason? And a lot of them were afraid that they were going to meet some inmates that, you know, outside of the jail, those that have, you know, either did their time and got out or were not, you know, whatever. And I was just like,
Andrew, mute.
Oh, sorry.
And I get it. But I'm like, but if you're doing your job as a corrections officer and you're doing it correctly, then you're not going to give those inmates any reason to harm you outside the facility. That was my thought anyway. So I don't know. There's a lot of different reasons why people feel the need to conceal carry. Some people feel that they're in fear for their life for some reason. Some people feel that they just want to be ready in the event something happens. Other people just think it's really cool. And other people are just like, well, it's my right, so I'm going to do it. Like, so, and I don't have any problem with any of those reasons. But the question becomes, if more people did conceal carry, would that reduce the amount of gun violence that we experience in our country?
Maybe. Well, we have absolutely no idea to know. We don't know that. There's no way to know because of the fact that conceal carry is – that shouldn't even be part of the conversation with gun control, because you have to have a license to conceal carry.
Well, so they're talking you've got
gun control built into that action there.
Now, yeah, but they're talking about arming teachers though, right? So if we're going to arm more teachers, and
they're not going to arm teachers. That ain't never going to, they're either going to get rid of guns, but they'll get rid of guns before they arm teachers. You can guarantee that.
I would agree.
Yeah.
So let me push back on that a little bit, Jeff, in a different life, and I'm not going to talk about the school that I'm affiliated with, but I'm on the board of directors of a nonprofit school, a group of schools, and there have been discussions about that. There actually is a school district, a rural school district here in Colorado, a public school district that has voted to arm staff. Not widely. They are designated as additional duties of security officers. We don't know, the community doesn't know who in the school is, but the superintendents, the principals, and some of the staff, whether it's the custodians, whether it's the teachers, but there are weapons in that school district. It's small. It was controversial, of course, but the school district decided to do it. And so in some areas, there is that kind of thing.
I think I was talking more on like as a federal mandated policy in public schools. I've seen the stories on some of the private schools and some of the smaller districts that do it. And I don't think there's a problem if you have resource officers from most counties who go to every school in North Carolina. There's a resource officer at every single school here. In Parkland, Florida, there was a resource officer there at the school. And you see that it doesn't, those things didn't affect anything. So arming more of the staff, that I don't think is a problem, but arming all the teachers, that ain't going to happen. That's what I'm saying. It's not going to be widespread like that, federally mandated.
And that's the thing is, with a lot of people think that, the federal government has rule of law over teachers. I mean, there's all politics is local and nothing is more local than education. I mean, I work in the politics of local education, and education should be parent run, local community run. It's not something that is mandated by the federal government. And so, just making this broad, everybody should or nobody should, that leads to the polarization. And that's one of the big issues with this conversation is, along with everything else in our current conversation, it becomes so polarized, people that believe so much on one side and so much in the other, that the center cannot hold, that there is no room for civil discourse and measured disagreement in this or many of the other conversations we're having right now.
Mm-hmm. I think it gets to the point, or it's gotten to the point where the inability for the people in the politics of it all, the politicians, the people up top, the inability for them guys to move or compromise on any single thing that they get to talk about has led to what's going on in the last couple of weeks. And what I mean by that is they should be embarrassed that there's teenagers leading the fight on whatever their stance is. And the reason why is because teenagers don't have a prefrontal cortex that leads them to make good decisions till they're 25 years old. So 35, 40, 55-year-old politicians cannot sit down and make a good decision and are now unable to get anything done one way or the other. And you've got teenagers out there being probably manipulated by really far right or really far left organizations that, I mean, because you listen to these kids out there talking, it's all talking points that come right from these political organizations. And none of these kids are saying anything that sounds like a teenager that would say something. At first it did, right. Then it quickly turned into this political shit.
It's both sides too.
It's both sides. It's absolutely both sides.
It's these fringe far left and right sides. And just like Dwayne had said, you're running into this roadblock where you can't have a civil discourse because people can't control their emotions about it.
And it's asinine. I think a lot of it too, though, is in my opinion, I think if there was more education about gun safety, gun control, I think there would be a different conversation. I think a lot of people that have such a strong opinion on the left side of the conversation, in many cases, aren't that knowledgeable or educated about guns.
Well, I was going to say the exact same thing. Like, I grew up in a super progressive, like, my parents were hippies. My mother was in a anti-war riot, like, terrified of guns, no guns in the house, no toy guns, like, nothing like that. But everything they ever said was 100% wrong about what guns do, how they do it, what they, what terms mean. And it came from fear, like absolute fear that of an inanimate object. And when I grew up and started learning more about guns and, got into it as a hobby and a sport, that fear goes away. Like it's just an object. I think at the end of the day, the person behind the trigger that has more to do with whether it's a good thing or a bad thing than the object itself. Mm-hmm. Like to the point, and I was just gonna say, like, I own an AR-15. It's 20 feet away from me in a safe. If my mother knew I had one or my father, they would absolutely lose their minds because it's a scary.
Well, hey, Andrew, you realize you just said that on a show that goes, unregulated release on the internet, right?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so let him. He's not a bad guy, parents. He really isn't.
That brings a good question. Let me ask you, Andrew.
Yeah.
So you were into guns and everything that you're doing with mm-hmm. with your hobby and the sport before you were a father. And your daughter is what, just over a little over two now?
No, she's 9 months old.
Oh, okay, almost one, I mean.
No, 9 months old.
God, I wish she was almost two. I mean, that would be almost done with preschool.
There's Eddie's going in situational awareness once again.
She's going on 17, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
How's she doing in her master's program?
Oh, it's incredible. She's actually doing a dual PhD.
Oh, Jesus. I meant to say she's almost one. That's what I meant. And yes. So let me ask you, honestly, has your view or thought about owning the guns that you have differed in the time that you have been now a father in the last 9 months?
Owning a gun or the politics or some of the regulation around it?
No, I mean, have you considered or you and your wife had different conversations around guns in the house now that you're a parent, now that you're parents?
So the only conversation we've had, and I think is a logical one. I have a gun in our bedroom. It's in a safe. It's locked up. And she wants to make the combination a couple numbers longer. That's the closest we've come to having a concern or a conversation.
Yeah.
In terms of me, I want more. Like I've been looking at a pocket pistol so I can carry more because, you know,
it's my right.
Well, no. Well, it is my right. But I think that for me, at least, I worry about being out, you know, some of the towns around us. We live in a really nice community, but some of the towns around us that we have to go to regularly are suboptimal in terms of public safety. And when I take her through that, you know, I would like to have a gun on me in case I'm in a situation where I can't get away and somebody's threatening her or myself or somebody in my family.
Andrew, this brings up a good point that I want to make. Where do you live currently? Don't give us your address, but where do you live? What state?
Massachusetts.
All right. And what are the gun control laws in that state? Are they much like Illinois and very, very strict?
They are very strict. They're among the strictest.
So yet you still have fear in certain places that you need to have some form of – so in the places that they have the strictest gun laws, and I know this is a very correlation, you know, causation thing, but Chicago, Southside Boston, some of the most dangerous places in America, a lot of, you know, murders and death and violence there that are associated with guns. Gun control has done nothing to stop that stuff from happening there because they're addressing the wrong issues.
Yes.
They're addressing the wrong issues in the government. And in you want to have a political discourse about what's going on? Why don't you talk about what caused an 18-year-old kid to walk into a school and shoot everyone instead of what he's using to do it with?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's ridiculous. We can get rid of a spoon. It ain't going to get rid of obesity.
Well, and I think, Jeff, and we keep talking about gun control, but even that is a loaded word, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just the statement, you know, causes people's brains to activate in a certain way. What does gun control mean? And to each of us, what does gun control mean? I'm much like Eddie. I don't own guns. I grew up, my father was a police officer. My father knew what had happened, saw what happened with guns in the home with people that weren't trained. And so he very deliberately did not keep guns in our home. It wasn't that we were unprotected. We did other things in our home to maintain protection. I've got a security alarm on my house. I've got billy clubs and knives. I've got as many weapons that I need to in my house to be able to protect my family. And same thing that goes along is, I've got, billy clubs or something, you know, tucked under my seat. And so, yeah, it's more hand-to-hand combat, but I feel like I can protect myself. I personally don't need guns. Was my profession. It wasn't my hobby. It wasn't something that I maintained. But then for me, gun control, and it's like you and Andrew had talked on your the show before very briefly about this. It's like vehicle control or pit bull control,
right,
or anything is licensed and regulated. So for me, gun control means regulating and training people for the proper use and handling of weapons. For other people, though, on both sides, gun control means no guns, take away all my guns, and things like that. So that statement, that word, those two words together, it's important to explore that. What does gun control mean?
Well, the problem is gun control does mean the middle of the road, like you're saying. It means that, you know, we have the right. You know, there's no law that says we have the right, but we all have the right to get from point to point. And this goes back to what I said in that one episode, and I think it's a good way to compare. So, but when you turn 17 in the United States, 16, 17, you go and you get licensed by the government to operate a motor vehicle. That motor vehicle is designed as a tool to move you from place to place, yet you have to have a license to operate it and to own one. But you have a right to own a gun, which is a tool that is just designed to do one thing. And do not get it twisted. I don't care what pro gun says about anything. That thing is just meant to kill things. But yet there are places where you can just go in and buy them without a license, without any, and shotguns, I don't care about what gun is it. If it fires a projectile at it, it's a firearm. And you should be able to have. I want, as a person who's pro gun, pro Second Amendment. You know, I have guns. My wife has guns. My kids have been shown guns. They respect them. I don't fault anyone who doesn't. But you have to. I don't have a gun that I don't have registered. I don't have a gun that I don't make sure that people know about, and I make sure that I'm trained and I understand it, because it's a tool that if a person that doesn't know what they're doing with it gets it in their hands, it does become something very dangerous. But if it's in the hands of someone that's professional about it, it just becomes another piece of equipment that hangs off their body. And there's nothing wrong with teaching and making sure people understand. Yeah, you can have this. You have a right to it. But we just want to make sure that you know what you're doing with it and what it can do, and make sure that you're the kind of person that is supposed to be having. I have no problem with talking about mental health problems with certain, and making regulations as to if you have a history of violence and a history of this or that. You know, I'm unfortunately, as an SF guy, I get a lot of guys who want me to just go out and just blast pro Second Amendment, but I just can't do it. And not because I'm anti-gun, but because I do sometimes hear things that I'm just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that common sense law thing is a buzzword that the far left uses. And I think people start getting really polarized when the left lets people get in there who, you know, want to ban guns. People, and you know, unfortunately, like Andrew's parents, who are just totally anti-gun. They get rid of all of them. And those people end up taking the forefront of the argument because they won't compromise on anything in the middle.
And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you got people that are pretty deranged, disturbed. If guns were not an option, then another form of a modality would use it. It would be knives. It would be bombs. It would be, yeah. You know.
Consider in Japan, it's like knife attacks are pretty, you know, in the Orient.
So, I mean, if people are hell-bent on killing people, they're going to find other ways to do it, right? So, in my mind, I think that they're using, you know, the events that are happening around guns as a catalyst to try to push an agenda for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of it, the extreme right with the NRA and their argument about it too. It's just like, but there's got to be, and I agree with Dwayne, right? The term gun control is a very difficult term because it has so many different definitions depending on who's using the term. And for me, I'm very much with Jeff in it. Really, I think they should change the term. I don't think it needs to be gun control. I think it needs to be gun accountability, right?
I think at this point, Eddie, that any changing of it is just going to be politically picked up as an altering of the words to change.
Maybe.
They need to get off guns altogether and deal with what's causing people to shoot people.
Well, here's the deal, right? Gun accountability, right? I have dogs that I have to register with my town. I have vehicles that I have to register, right? I mean, to your point, right? We have these things.
And if that dog goes off the leash, Eddie, you know, if the pit bull goes and bites someone, then you're held accountable for
that. Absolutely.
If you have multiple DUIs, you lose the license to operate that vehicle.
Yes. And yep. I think if everyone was required to register guns and they said, all right, listen, you register your guns, you can have as many as you want. You can, whatever you want to do, that's fine. But here's the deal. If that gun is used in a crime, whether it's performed by you or somebody else, you are held responsible. So that young kid that walks into the school and kills six kids or however many, I guarantee you that gun was not registered to him or wouldn't have been registered to him. It would have been registered to his parents, right?
Or someone he stole it from.
Exactly right. So, you know, if they take that gun and they say they go back to the registration and they say it belongs to this person, now that person is now held liable for the homicide of six children in that school. I guarantee you, if people are held accountable for the weapons that they own and control and are registered for, people are going to control those guns in a much different way.
I understand what you're saying, but that's when you start hitting slippery slopes, because as you know, you can't control. It's one of those things. Like if somebody broke into my house and decided, because they knew I had guns, and they decided to go use those guns in a crime, would you hold me liable?
No, but as soon as you found out those guns were stolen, like 24 hours, you call the police.
Exactly. Correct.
Right?
Of course. So
yeah, or if it was like within 12 hours of them stealing it, they did it. You know, they would be able to, in a court of law, prove that you had no culpability because there was no time.
It's one of those things, but when you start holding people accountable for actions that they didn't commit,
like not securing their weapons.
Well, but yes, of course. I mean, if your weapons are secured, then they're secured. But then, I mean, what is everyone's definition of secured?
Well, that's why you make it a, you make it not, a federal thing that they take. This is the stuff you have to be doing to be able to own guns.
That's, I mean,
right. It's got to be in a safe. It's got to be all this stuff. Yeah. I mean,
doesn't take away. You can't not have it. You just got to have it with these things, following these rules, so that you are operating it like a professional, not like
So you take my vehicle, for example. Yes, I still have to register it, but after I get it registered, I have to go and get it inspected. It's state law. And I got to take it to a mechanic, and they've got to make sure that, you know, the brake pads are good and the rotors are okay and the there's enough tread on the tires and the you know, signals work and the brake lights work. Why? Because not only do I have to register my vehicle, but it has to be deemed safe to operate on the roads of the state. And same thing with the gun. If you want to own the gun, fine, have it registered. But there's some other things. Make sure that you're operating it in a safe manner. Does that mean you got to get a safety weapons course? Why not? I mean, we have to take a driving driving exam. We got to do, you know, written exam to own a vehicle. Will that piss people off because it makes owning a gun harder?
No, well, yes. I think one of the things, it's not that it would piss them off because it makes owning guns harder. Some may see it as an invasion of privacy. See, it's not controversial to be on a registry of I have this vehicle, but we're so polarized right now that if my license was out there and there was a list of gun owners, there were so many people that are against gun owners that now that puts me in a position of my private views, and people will make snap judgments. If you're a gun owner, then you must be a Republican. If you're a veteran, then you must be a conservative. And everybody automatically jumps to these, and they take the virulent view of what that person is. And so the idea of me having to register my guns and do all this that the government says to do, that's an invasion of my privacy, right? I have the private choice to do what happens in my bedroom behind closed doors between me and my wife is my business, and that's it. And so why should the government come in my home and tell me what to do? And so I see that as an argument against the widespread licensing and regulation simply because of the controversial nature of gun ownership.
You think, Eddie, and you know what Eddie just proposed is actually so much of a common sense thing, because if they had to cut this thing off at the head years ago when this stuff first surfaced, Eddie just created an entire industry of creating jobs. You have to now have more gun manufacturers and more, you know, registered gun inspectors and everything that can actually have their own places to go in and get that. That creates jobs. So, and if the NRA turned it around and said, "Yeah, we think it's a good idea. We'll have it make sure that your guns are safe, that they're operational, they get registered, they get inspected, you know, every couple of years," that you're creating jobs instead of friggin' causing all kinds of problems. But I'll tell you what, the NRA, in my opinion, is just as wrong as the far left, because
that ship has sailed.
It sailed. But can you imagine if they'd have kicked that off at the beginning? You want to create more jobs in America? Let's create more of a way to make money off of it. I mean, let's
hit so my so my my opinion. I haven't even stated like where I'm at, right? So, in essence, with me, I live in another highly regulated firearm state, and that's the state of New York. And I mean, we make some crazy laws, you know, with like magazine capacity and stuff that just, you know, is off the reservation and making sense, right? I mean, we even have law enforcement officers that have arrested active duty soldiers for having 30 round magazines in their trunks. So let me put it that way. That's where I'm coming at. Now, my opinion is that every gun that you have, I think, should be a registered firearm. I don't care what kind of gun it is. I think it's the projectile gun. It's a gun. You know what I mean? I think they should all be registered. That's just my opinion. I think that you must have a level of education with certificates, just like you do in the state of New York for hunting. You have to go to a hunter safety course. I think that you should have to go to firearm safety courses to own any kind of firearm.
Yeah.
And you should go through that. It should be a barrier to entry I've had people that are very pro gun come at me with that and say, you know, well, that doesn't, that, you know, thieves don't care about the laws, and thieves and robbers and whoever, criminals don't care about gun control. Right. And of course they don't, because that's kind of the point. It's legal. But at the end of the day, I think that for actual citizens setting an example, I think that all weapons should be registered. And I think that you should have the education to go along with that, to actually own and use legally firearms. And I think that's where I stand. I want to be able to use guns for everything that I do, whether I'm hunting or sporting or everything like that. But I see no problem in registering that fire, unless you can look at it as an invasion of privacy. And that's your opinion. But I think that the law of the land is, should be, as I stated, and that's just my opinion. Of course, I am up to debate on any of that, because there's a lot of factors. It's not a black and white issue in a lot of senses or in a lot of circumstances, but just so everyone knows my stance.
Bennett, I cannot see very many law abiding citizens in this country that would disagree with that. So which then begs the question, the flip side of that coin is,
Who's in control of this motherfucker?
Well, does that also mean that the people that would be opposed to that are probably doing things with their guns that they probably shouldn't, right?
Right. Well, it's like, it's one of those things. It's like you bear to say, you know, well, why won't you? And then you always get hit with the, you know, it's like liberty tyranny. Like, oh, well, yeah, no, come on.
People. Those are statements that come from a situation like Eddie just, or like you just said, Bennett, where the inmates are running the asylum kind of situation.
Right. Craziness, madness. Like, can we just stop it and use common sense? And every time I get into a discussion like this, I don't get emotional about it anymore. I used to.
Yeah.
Because somebody, as Dwayne put it before, somebody has to hold the line. Somebody has to hold the middle ground, because this is asinine.
Yeah.
The fact that we have these weird theories and all this, who gives a fuck? It's called common sense, folks. It's called people, you know, oh, well, people don't kill people. Guns kill people. No, people that want to do dumb shit kill people. You know what I mean? People that don't have common sense want to go out there. That's the crazy side of it, right? Now, with these school shootings, it's because our society is fucked in a lot of ways, right? We've got kids that are just unmerciful on each other about bullying and the way that things are, man. I mean, if anyone knows this stuff, it's like Eddie knows it because of his family. I know it because of my kids.
We all see the way they talk to each other on social media, and the internet has made them.
And then you wonder why. So it's called actual leadership, and people actually being part of their community and setting good examples instead of just going off the handle and fighting each other all the time about the dumbest shit possible.
My daughter's, it scares me to death of my daughter coming up, because she's at that age, about middle school. But my son off at college, he's one of the very popular kids, high school athlete, you know, everyone knew him, everyone liked him. I made sure all the way through his life, I told him, if I ever find out, son, that you're bullying somebody ever, I'm like, you will find out what real bullying is. I'm so anti-bully. I feel like Bennett does about it. It drives me crazy, because bullying's not like it was when we were all kids. All right. So you had one kid on the school ground who had the courage, and even though he's a bully, the courage to address you physically to your face and say things to you. Those bullies are different. Those are people who are just acting out because they've got something going on. Then you had the internet start. And where you could say things anonymously and say things without owning what you say. And then the freedom of speech thing, where you can say all the stuff you want all the time, no matter what. And I think we just dropped Bennett. But it got into this part where they started going, everybody turned into these cyber bullies.
Yep.
That made them worse people long term. I mean, they were just horrible, horrible people saying horrible things to each other. And there's been no regular, there's been no outlash against that. You got these groups, they do this stuff here and there. But that's where I want to go next with it is, instead of us focusing on gun control, let's, even though the school shooting thing is not an epidemic, no matter what anyone wants to say, school shootings, and I looked it all up and I checked it all out, they have been declining since the 1990s massively. I mean, we are no bounce on young children in schools that we were then. It was just that now we have a 24-hour media cycle where this stuff is in your face all the time. And these things aren't happening at an epidemic rate. They're just happening right in your face. You're told about it right away. You get video feeds from all these different multiple devices of the scenes. You see the things. It's like the people seeing war. War hasn't changed. If you think about like back in William Wallace, can you imagine what the battlefields look like?
You bring up a very good point, and it goes back to our experience in military and combat is someone who takes a life through hand-to-hand combat, bayonet charges, has a very different experience of taking that life than someone that shoots somebody from 150 or 300 meters away, right? It is a very different experience. And so the farther you get away from a situation, the easier it is to manage it. Yeah. One of the exceptions really is snipers because of both the distance and the closeness and the personal nature of the kill. But that's, and you mentioned social media, the advent of the internet and how that thing had changed. People are much less likely to say something to someone that is controversial and you get backlash if you're face to face with them. Right. So there's more personal restraint. Then at the beginning of social media, people could say things anonymously that they wouldn't have the courage, honestly, to say out loud. And then that got them a certain kind of feeling. Then someone came up with the idea, well, I'm actually going to use my name. I'm going to put my name out there to say this. And then even though in previous, you wouldn't say that in person, but it didn't become this great big backlash, and now this person actually put their name to an extreme controversial thought or phrase and nothing happened to them, and that's empowering. And so now I can sit behind my computer and I can shoot all of this vitriol and I can just spout from the wood and I have no immediate consequences. Mm-hmm. And that empowers me and that gives me more of a platform. And it's not just gun control, it's privatization of the VA, and it's not the And I absolutely support the Me Too movement, and men should act like professionals and not conduct themselves improperly. But even the polarization of all of these different things, education in schools, everything becomes so polarized because people have this buffer called the internet, and I can say what I want and not have immediate backlash. I could say some horrible thing and then shut my computer down. And then everybody can go crazy, and I just feel good that I got this horrible thing out.
Can you imagine the world we live in if we stop talking about gun control and the Second Amendment, we start talking about the First Amendment and whether or not you have the right to say whatever you want? It would be a far different conversation because there was nobody that wants to give that right up. Yet no one wants to be held responsible for the Second Amendment or the First Amendment.
Think about the, and this was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago when the young lady, she was flying to Africa and she made some inappropriate, very insensitive, racist remark. She got on the airplane and it was like an 8-hour flight. By the time she landed in South America or South Africa, she had lost her job because her
life was
right.
Completely altered. Right.
Her insanely, in idiotic and everything. It's just it was a racist comment, and if it was done stupidly between a group of friends, it just would have gone nowhere. But she
exactly what it was.
Right.
She made the mistake of doing it publicly. And she, I can't remember the guy's name that I read doing the interview on her, but I mean, she truly made, it was truly a joke. And like to a group of us, that joke would have been totally like, whatever. But instead somebody grabbed it, ran off with it. But see, here's, and this is the vitriol that you guys speak of. There were people, because what her comment was basically, I'm going to South Africa. I hope I don't get AIDS. Never mind. I won't because I'm white. That was her comment, basically.
right? Absolutely horrible. Just horrible.
But then on the other flip side of that, you had people dogpiling on this whole Twitter feed. Literally, I hope someone with AIDS rapes her and then kills her. Like, that's to the other side of it.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that person never would have said that if they were in, had to do a publicly.
Never.
Right.
Man, that's crazy. Like, what is wrong with you folks? Like, we've all said stuff that's off color, out of context, bad, right? We do it all the time, especially in the military. Let's be honest, right? But holy shit, again, where the hell is common sense? Where is it?
So it's not so much responsibility in gun control. Of course it's that, but it's responsibility in our communication. How responsible are we for the words that we use and the manner in which we use them? And so there is no, as you said, Jeff, there's no responsibility. There's no personal responsibility
for
deciding just because I can say something. I can, you know,
doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, nobody says that I can't walk around with crap in my pants, but I'm not going to walk around with crap in my pants because I'm just not going to do that, right?
Because there's a social shunning you would get from everyone that would motivate you to not do that.
You would think so, but there's not. You would think that that's the case, but there wasn't a social shunning for somebody saying, "I hope someone with AIDS rapes that lady." That's an equally socially inappropriate thing, and nobody said you might not want to say it. You know, I mean, and so yeah, there's all of these different things that I shouldn't walk around in these things doing these things, but yet people do, and there's no consequences. And well, so it's yeah, not so that we should go around
it,
making
we catch it bad,
right?
Well, and so here's a perfect example, right?
I don't want to cut you off, but I have to make this point. The politicians that go, well, if they did it, then I can do it. It's right. All that bullshit. It's like, well, Bush did it.
What did my mom say? Two wrongs don't make a right. Don't jump off the bridge with your friends. I mean, it's just maybe moms just need to run the country. That's just except for Andrew's mom.
Right.
I mean, but I love Andrew's mom, but let me have my guns.
So all right. Here's a perfect example, right? So, this is real life in corporate America. I deal with a lot of different folks in my job, and there's an organization that we have partnered with that, and we rely on them heavily to help with a lot of our processes. And you know, it's growing pains because you know they're new to us, we're new to them. There's a level of expectation that we're paying them to perform. It's called an SLA or service level agreement in terms of timeliness and quality, etc. And there was, you know, a good time there where they weren't performing in the manner in which we wanted them to perform, and we'd get into these conversations on, you know, back and forth in email. And it was, you know, you're not doing this. And they come back, well, you're not doing that. And it's back and forth, right? And then we try to get on conference calls, and it ends in, you know, disagreements and arguments and frustration and very argumentative, and nothing really gets accomplished. And this happens for, you know, a couple of months. And then finally we're like, okay, we've got to find a way to move forward. And going back and forth in email, going back and forth on these conference calls isn't helping either organization move forward. And so we took a small team of folks and we flew down to Florida and met with these folks in person. And it's the first time we saw them. It's the first time they saw us. And you finally get to put faces to names. And we sit down in a two-day workshop, two-day event, all day, both days. And we start actually in person together working through and hashing through these issues. And something magical happens. Neither side has the ability to hide behind email. We don't have the ability to hide behind a conference call. We're in the same room face to face, and things that were said on our conversations, on our conference calls, and things that were said back and forth in an email, they just weren't said in person, because there's things that just don't get said, and attitudes and vibrato, whatever you want to call it, all those kind of melt away when you're face to face with somebody and you start to empathize a little bit about what they're dealing with, and they can empathize with what you're dealing with. And after 2 days, we were able to solve so many things that we were unable to solve, you know, in the months previous. And, you know, after those 2 days, they went back with actions that we agreed upon that they would change. And we went back with actions that we agreed that we would change, and we're continuously working through that. And now we meet on a weekly basis, and we talk about the progress and the changes and the things that we're implementing. And we're having a different conversation now than we were before. And it all came down to just meeting them in person, face to face. And I think this is a lot of what we're talking about here is everybody, whether it be cyberbullying with our kids or even, you know, places that we work, you know, in our personal lives and professional. It's so easy nowadays to take a position to just, I call it, you know, hide behind the Facebook shield, right? It's like being in your car. You're in your car and you get road rage. I mean, you could flip somebody off. You can, you know, honk your horn and roll down your window and cuss them out. But
how many times have we had this conversation?
You get that same person, you know, on the sidewalk, face to face. Like, you're not going to be flipping them off. You're not going to be cursing at them.
Yeah, Billy Badass turns into Sally. Shut your mouth,
right,
real quick.
Exactly,
so
right.
What causes this? This is one of those things that I've been thinking about for a long time, because I used to be that guy, but I don't know where the shift happened for me. Why, you know what it is? And really what it comes down to, I think you have to actually intentionally decide to act like a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
like an
absolutely.
Actual, like intentionally decide to say, I am a father, I am a husband, I am a good member of my community, and I refuse to act like a fucking asshole.
So to your point, Bennett, you have got outliers like the guy in Vegas who went off the hinges and shot everybody up. That there's no accounting for people who become unhinged and criminal, right? But all right. These kids and all these younger people, and like you said, deciding to being aware of your responsibilities and taking accountability for your own actions has led you to be a different person. And I think that not making our kids and not making people accountable and responsible and showing them that this is just not how you act. This, you know, yelling, getting up in front of millions of people and yelling like Adolf Hitler is just not how you act. And here's the thing that I don't understand with these kids from Parkland. I really feel, I don't like what they say, but they're kids. And I feel bad because they went through a massively traumatic event and they have not dealt with it yet. And even if you read some of the statements that David Hogue, the head of this, he's saying, I haven't had time to sit down and really deal with it. When he does, he's going to be far down the road of this becoming something that has been buried. And we all can, you know, with Dwayne's show, we all have known what that could do to people over time if you don't just deal with things up front effectively and responsibly. And this kid is going to have some issues, and a lot of these other kids are going to have issues because right now they're not dealing with what they went through. They talked about some of the stuff they saw and some of the things that happened, and being in fear for your life, like legitimate fear for your life, is something that will change you as a person. And having kids, and that's something else. You legitimately are in fear and responsible for another life, not because you choose to be, but because you are. It's just something that happens with kids. It changes you as a person, and you become a more responsible person, hopefully.
So well, Andrew, yeah. Just to synthesize the solution so far, Bennett says we should act like responsible individuals. Jeff says we should teach our kids to act like responsible individuals. And Eddie says we should engage in face-to-face civil discourse without an agenda on things that we commonly agree about. Is that sort of where we're at?
Yeah, and that comes from five guys who all have very different opinions about
this why can't we do that? And I know that, I mean, and it's all facetious, but it's in, you know, we talk about common sense, but that's the solution. And I don't know that solution is possible. It's obviously not happening.
No.
People are not accepting responsibility for themselves. You know, I can tell you as all of you've said, I've spoken to my kids about bullying. We very deliberately took them out of a school system that we knew. And this wasn't just bullying. The girl across the street that went to our local middle school, she was threatened with rape within 3 days of when she got into middle school, right? This was seventh grade, right? And they say, well, I'm going to take you back. You know, this is where all the new girls go to get raped in this bathroom. And I looked at my daughter, I said, not for us. And we chose a different educational path. because we took responsibility for ourselves and raised our children. And the same thing with the civil discourse and face-to-face. We're not hiding from this conversation. We're actually having this conversation. But this is an anomaly for people with potentially divergent or potentially similar views are sitting down and having an honest conversation without an agenda on for the greater good. And that's just simply not happening these days.
Because, I think it's because it's easier to stay anonymous and be, pretend to have a big dick on the internet and say shit that you would never say to another human being, because they're not human beings to you. They're a screen name, or they're,
they're ones and zeros.
That's ones and zeros. And I think that's what it comes down to. For me, I used to be like Bennett said, I was the guy who would flip people off in traffic and yell at them and all this other stuff. And then I can literally point to the exact second it stopped. It was the day after the election, this most recent time through. My wife was pregnant, 3-4 months pregnant, and we were going to pick up dinner, and some dude was driving down the wrong way in his enormous truck, and my wife honked at him. He pulled up next to us. He flipped us off and was screaming at us. And I went and I put my hand on the door to get out and go and take him apart. And my wife just started screaming at me. You have a child. You're married. I can't do this alone. Like, stop being a fucking moron. And yeah, I sat back and went,
ego.
Holy shit, I'm an idiot. Yeah. And I haven't, I'll mutter under my breath, but I don't flip people off anymore. I don't yell at people anymore in the car. I yell at people at work for fun, but
for sport. Pleasure.
Yeah.
Like to pick out the intern.
But even that, and that's the, because in just psychological and neurological, the emotional control of your actions was fully involved. That lizard brain, that underneath part of your brain, your prefrontal lobe was not engaged. You were not consciously thinking about controlling my emotions. You were simply acting on emotions.
Yep.
I've had veterans who, justice involved veterans. But one time the veteran, the police had come because he and his girlfriend had an argument. And they were in separate rooms and they were talking, him and the police and the partner. And so the veteran, is agitated, as some veterans are. And so the police officer reaches down and put his hand on his gun, and the veteran started to lunge forward instead of what most people would do is, oh, that's a threatening gesture. And I'm going to, but for a veteran, that pattern is, I need to close distance. I need to close distance and neutralize this threat. And he had that split second of, holy crap, what did I just do? And we talked about it later, is that that's the emotional control, and there's no cognitive control in that big, huge front part of our brain. And that's what we're talking about, that Bennett's talking about, is decide not to allow our emotions to overrule us. We're not engaging that front part of our brain whenever we're having these very highly emotional discussions about gun control and
right,
about
right.
everything else.
Go ahead, Bennett.
I'm just going to say the one thing that, and everyone always, I have a lot of veterans, and I just see this a lot with veterans, and at least in mine and at Dwayne's type of work, where they're a lot of times trying to suppress that big brain, because when they do, or either way, here's what happens a lot, is that this is what mindfulness is, folks. Like, people, that's like living now, like understanding what you're doing, what your body's doing in the present. Doesn't mean you can't plan for the future and look at the past and learn from it. But people always, you see this type of behavior and therapy and stuff with mindfulness is like this weird thing. All it's actually doing is allowing you to live a life where you're under control. I mean, would you disagree with that, Dwayne, or is that?
No, that's exactly it. I mean, and going back to Andrew's wonderful story, I can imagine you weren't even thinking 3 months ahead whenever your daughter
I was 30 seconds ahead.
Weren't even thinking, where I was going. There was no conscious thought. There was only initial action. And your wife breaking into your consciousness and bringing it to your attention. A lot of times,
change the pattern.
Change the pattern, right?
Aren't they supposed to make us do things that we're not supposed to do?
Right. But that's the thing is something else coming to our attention is what makes us change, because awareness is key. I've talked about it. I've written, you know, all this other stuff, but becoming aware that there's a problem and then we can decide to make change. You could have become aware, you know, she brought it to your attention that, you know, she can't do this alone and you got a baby. You could have disregarded all that, say, yeah, that's all nice, but yet I'm still going to go over here and punch his fist with my head. And, you know, all of this is going to happen. And you could have disregarded it, but it was once you have the awareness, then you can decide to change. And awareness is not happening right now. And the change, the desire to change, the desire to compromise is simply not happening right now.
And that goes to my next point. And that it's, we actually went around the wheels with it here, is that right after you have an event like what happened in Parkland, you have all the lizard brain emotional response, and there's no common sense or cognitive critical thinking applied in that moment where you're still dealing with the emotional fallout of an event like that. And you see a lot of stuff on social media, these people who have been fed up, and I will give them credit. They are these people that are always fed up with this, with it just being going away after a while, but they're like, now is when we should be talking about it. And I disagree 100%. Now is not when we should be talking about it. We should be talking about this once people have had a chance to sit down, cognitively think out, get calm, be self-aware.
Well, after their fight or flight has gone away.
Right. And then readdress it. And if the guy anti-gun people want to say, well, it never gets addressed again, they need look for no further than themselves. Because if you stick on something and say, now we're going to talk about it, now that it's been all chilled out and everything calms down, let's talk about it. That's when that's when they're responsible for getting it back into the, you know, public sector's focus. But now you're never going to get, all it does is feed off itself and gets bigger and bigger and more out of control. And you got people out there, grown ass adults, man, are going after these kids who are in this situation because these kids are being used by these far political organizations on both sides to make their point, because they got nowhere left to turn. And next they're going to be saying that cartoon characters are going to be the frontline defense against this stuff. I don't know where they're going to go next, but it's nowhere else to go.
This is kind of my point, right? So these kids, you know, we look at these kids that are, they're, you know, actively protesting or whatever, and we could look at them and say that, you know, they're just children. They're still a little ignorant. And the truth of the matter is a lot of kids in our nation today, they just want to go to school and be confident that they're going to be able to come home safely at the end of the day. Right. Right. I mean, these are kids. They're there to learn. They're there to get educated. They're the future leaders of our country. And they go to school and they're in fearful of their life, and rightfully so. I mean, given you know, everything that's happening in our country lately, and they just want it to change. And the only thing that they know that is what they hear. They hear on the news, they hear on the media, they hear whatever. And this is this keyword of gun control. So they just want to be safe. And how do they go about doing that? Well, they're advocates for gun control because they feel that that's what the adults are telling them that needs to happen in order to make them safe. Whether it's true or not, I don't think that gun control is going to make schools any safer. I think everything that we talked about today about gun education, about being a little empathetic, about, you know, learning how to be a little bit more in tune with our own emotions and be more cognizant of our surroundings, to be more empathetic towards other people, having an open dialogue. I mean, this is how we fix it, right? One of the things, are you guys familiar with that show Vice on HBO?
Yeah, no. Yes.
I know what it is. I don't watch it.
Well, I just recently watched one. It's a private school that trains student warriors to swarm an active shooter. And kind of, I think it was Dwayne that alluded to it. Like when we're trained in the military in a close combat environment, you know,
you can say it, violence of action.
Yeah, in an ambush,
close,
right,
and destroy.
You close, right? In a close ambush, you basically attack, and because you know, trying to run and hide at the end of the day ends up yielding more casualties. So they're actually training these students in this school. Everybody in the school is trained on. You got to watch it. I'll give you guys the link. We can even put the link to this. It's on YouTube. You can watch it on YouTube, but. It's an incredible, now granted, they're able to do this because it's a private school. They obviously wouldn't probably be able to do this in a public school, but it kind of, it really, when I watched it, I was like, wow, what a different approach to gun control. What a different approach to making school safer. They arm more of the teachers. Everyone is trained. They go out on the range and they shoot. They have actual active shooter drills where the students will take up positions throughout the school, predetermined battle stations, if you will, and they're trained to basically, you know, set obstacles or barricades for the shooter, and then when they enter a room, they basically swarm and take them down, get control of the gun. Will one or two students get hit? Probably, but you're not going to be left with the, you know, the 15, 16 casualties that you see in today's. And it's pretty sad to say that something like this is necessary, but at the end of the day, you got to conform to the nature of the world, right? You can't just bury your head in the sand and pretend like the shit doesn't exist, because it does.
Or pretend that you want to live in a different world than the one you live in. This is the world we have.
Right.
We cannot live in Camelot.
And that's exactly what my school or our school, my kids' school system has done, is the teachers have gone through that kind of crisis immediate response. And we've looked at things at like non-lethal methods. You know, wasp spray shoots like 50 yards and somebody gets a thing of wasp, right? In your face, and you're not going to be thinking about, you know, fire extinguishers. But there's so many different ways to use things in your environment that it doesn't have to be lethal means, but exactly that, you know, distracting the shooter and all of these active shooter drills. It doesn't require to have teachers being armed, but it doesn't also, and this is again, this polarization of the discussion, not arming teachers equals teachers are vulnerable. That's not true, but people want that to be true.
Not even close, right?
So they can say, you know, arm the teachers, and that's my standpoint. It's the thing that frustrates me about this entire, it's why I don't get into a lot of controversial discussions or Twitter tantrums, is that people have lost the ability, in my opinion, to have civil discourse between two individuals.
For sure.
Agreed.
Yeah, we literally have, you know, just an entire part of the society that's meet violence with violence, just more of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's kind of how I see the pro, like the really pro gun people. How about let's meet violence with education? And, you know, I mean, it's one of those things on the battlefield. In why is the United States military so effective?
Because we hold each other accountable for what we do on the battlefield in most cases.
And we have pretty good training, right? That's what I was just going to say. Wouldn't you agree that we have the world's best trained military?
I would absolutely agree.
So we're really good at it. So why wouldn't we educate our population the same way, not dealing with every issue?
Because they have a right not to be educated. I mean, and that's
I do. I agree.
I retain my right to maintain
my ignorance.
I maintain my right to be a moron.
Right. So. And it is, it's an inalienable right. Isn't that in the Constitution? Is I get to be a douchebag, right?
Right.
I get to be as dumb as possible for as long as possible.
Yes. Yes. Cause I just want to be dumb as a box of rocks. That's
and even this, right. And even somebody listen to this, and those who are very hardcore probably isn't listen to this, but then somebody's going to take that, said, oh, they called me dumb. Oh, they called me a douchebag. They called me a moron. They're hate mongers and blah, blah, blah. And people will take it personally. Yeah. Right. You know, whoever's listening to this to think that we're talking about you, we're not talking about you. We're not talking. We don't want to insult you. We don't want to insult anybody.
Hey, guess what, Snowflake? I don't know you. I don't care about you. I mean, you know what it comes down to? It's what it really comes down to is worry about yourself. But worry about what happens in your life and make it a better place. Stop being a dick.
So is this the first time ever that Bennett's been the one to say something that everyone fucking's like, oh, not me? Because I was thinking it. I was thinking the word snowflake, but I don't like to put labels on people. Bennett, you hate monger. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just so over it. So over it.
I am talking to those people. I'm talking to them on both sides. The ones who won't, who toe their line, their party line or their positional line so much that they can't sit down and compromise. If you can't compromise, then you're not growing or learning, or you're no use to anyone.
If you can't compromise, you're a child.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. We teach our kids sharing and caring, and you know, we're talking about it right now. It's different about in front of someone talking it out. Like Eddie said, that's something that's a learned response from having social interaction. Maybe if you think this is happening more often, and maybe it is, or maybe the stats are wrong. But if it is happening more often, you have nowhere else to blame except the fact that the kids sit on those damn devices all day instead of going out and learning social skills to interact with one another like human beings. And that's the bottom line. When it comes to these kids in the schools, that's exactly what's happening. When it comes to all the other people, you got people that lose their minds or are criminals or have agendas. But your kids walking into school shooting up is everything to do with social isolation that they're either doing to themselves or they're doing through the bullying that is also caused by the social media and the interaction. Get your kids outside and make them learn how to interact with people like people, because they're going to go. I work in the IT industry with guys who spent their entire lives in basements. And I tell them, I don't want you sending me a spark message, a jabber message to tell me that you need something. And they're like, well, yeah, but I'm like, no, you come to me and ask me to my face. You got it. They're like, well, I don't. I'm like, first of all, I don't want you perpetuating your isolation and not having any kind of interaction with people. Get up off your ass, come talk to me, and you'll probably get a better response, because you'll get a response. And I just don't respond to them when they send me messages like that.
Yeah, don't text me from the next room.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you need a glass of water or whatever. Or
even worse, I got one guy that does it from like two seats down, like two little offices down. I'm like, hey, dude, I can literally talk at normal level and you can hear my voice.
But your normal level is louder than most.
Yeah, that's I gotta say. Both level intensity and rapidity.
It's all about pitch, tone, and inflection, buddy.
But even as you're talking, Jeff, and you know, and everybody wants to, you know, the evil nature of everything else, and it's the devices and things like that. And I get it. And it's the nature of the world that we live in, and how are we going to make those big changes? But you referenced, you know, the guy Mandalay Bay shooting and everything else that was happening, and he went shooter in the tower. But Whitman went shooter in the tower in 1966, and there were no video games, right? There were no, you know, all of this other thing. It's people do these things. I recall, you know, as a young man in Missouri, St. Louis, in the early 80s, there was a kid that just went and massacred like his entire family. They lived next door to each other in rural Missouri, and he just wiped out the whole family. The kid just, he, you know, whatever it was, crazy, insane, whatever words you want. This has been happening for millennia, but we haven't, you know, it, like you said, Jeff, it's all in our face. And the rapid cycle, and everything is always emotional. Everything is right now. How long has it seemed like it's been since Mandalay Bay, since the Las Vegas shooting?
Ages.
Ages. It's been 6 months.
Yep.
Yeah. It's only literally, the October 1st, it's been 6 months, but it seems like years, because this constant news cycle and everything else that everybody, that it's, we're constantly bombarded, and it's these blips on the radar. But that was a hugely significant event.
But that event, you know, bit itself off in the end, because it was very obvious very quickly that there was no political terrorist or some kind of, and it was just a guy that went crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was very quickly learned, and it's always moved on, and there was nothing anyone, I mean, this guy had just went off hinge.
And the thing about gun control, in gun control is he didn't have a criminal history that kept him from buying the guns. He didn't have a mental health history. I mean, he flew under every single possible radar that would have been. And so the only thing would have kept that from happening is Bennett's solution. Don't act like a jerk, right? Don't take some personal control and personal restraint and not do those things. And that's the kind of thing that we can slap everything else. You know, just like, you know, everyone else, the government can be like Andrew's wife and say, hey, don't get out of the car and don't get out of the car. The only one that can decide not to get out of the car is Andrew.
Yep.
And so it comes down to personal responsibility.
And so, that goes,
I mean,
that
it's,
goes,
it's
that
really goes, got to a lot of the,
you can have everybody in the world follow that mantra. And still, when somebody goes completely batshit crazy, I'm not talking they don't have control over there, what's going on. That's the whole definition of being a lunatic, is you have no sense of mindfulness. That's still going to have these things happen. So what I'm saying is that even with all that, if we had everyone perfectly in tune with themselves and making good decisions, there's still going to be people who have breaks, and there's things that are going to be unforeseen, and things are going to happen. So we have to stop making this an emergency situation and just realize that we can do, we have to do what we can do to mitigate it, but then we have to deal with the fact that it's still going to happen, because no plan gets past the first contact, as we all know. But yet that doesn't mean we don't plan for it, but we accept the fact that it's going to fall apart. And there's things that are going to, there's things that are going to happen that you can't foresee. That's the whole point of life. If it was all freaking played out and simple, it would be boring and nobody would want to stay around. So it's just the world we live in. And we have to live in the world we live in like responsible people, not like a bunch of emotional morons.
So,
and,
is
and,
it,
and
is
right.
It,
so
I was
the last
say,
point I have to make, just the last one I have to make, Eddie, and then I'm going to mute myself forever. But basically what it comes down to, and this is just the, and I beat this to death with the trust, gratitude, and forgiveness shit, right? All that you can do is look in the mirror every day and say that I choose to be a fucking human being today and truly start there. It can be as touchy-feely and everyone can say whatever, woo-woo boy, but my God, this is a, you know, I'm a reconnaissance Marine. I was a U.S. Army infantryman. I have taken lives. I have saved lives. I choose to be a fucking human. Don't use all your bullshit excuses as excuses. Choose to be a good person now and choose to be good to everyone else around you. Right? Educate people on how they can be better people, not better gamers or better whatever. Just make the decision to actually give a shit about other humans until they give you a reason to not treat them like a human. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, absolutely.
This is the way that I live my life. And if I can do it, I sure as hell know that the rest of the world can.
Been it for president.
But no, I'm just, I'm just saying.
I woke up this morning, I pissed excellence right after I listened to Bennett, and I can do anything.
Right, exactly. So, but at the end of the day, that's what it really comes down to. It's you taking personal responsibility for the shit that you do. And if you're an asshole, don't be freaking all butthurt when people treat you like an asshole. And no, in turn, if you put out good energy and you put out positive stuff, it's hard to be sad when you're being useful. So be useful to society. Have at it.
And to caveat that, Bennett, I totally agree. And I think if everyone did that and took one additional step, and that is stand up for somebody else around you. You see somebody else being treated shitty. I just recently came from a meeting not that long ago where somebody was really humiliated and chewed out in front of the entire group. And nobody in the meeting said anything, including myself. And I look back on it now and I'm like, you know, why didn't I say something? Why didn't I stand up? Why didn't I, you know, voice my opinion about how inappropriate that I felt that was? Was it self-preservation? Is it because I was didn't want to draw attention onto myself? Like many, many excuses I could come up with. But at the end of the day, I didn't stand up for something that I firmly believed in. And that was... And I look back on it now, like, damn, if I would have had a do-over, I would have done things differently, because nobody deserves to be treated like that. So I think, you know, getting up every morning and choosing to be a human and it is definitely more than half the battle. But take that one step further and say, if you've come across an opportunity to stand up for someone else that's maybe being bullied or it's being treated inappropriately or whatever, don't just keep your mouth shut and look the other way and think, oh, well, that has nothing to do with me. It does. It has everything to do with everyone. If everyone fought for what's right in this world, it would be a different world.
Jesus, Eddie. That touched me.
Sometimes people need people to do like what Andrew's wife did. Sometimes you need to look at somebody when they start flying off the handle, look at them, calm as day, and just go stop.
Yeah,
because it's breaking that pattern. This is all psychology.
Mm-hmm. My son asks me all the time why I never engage anybody in public who's being aggressive or anything. I always break contact, if you will. And I told him quite frankly, I'm like, son, just because I have a certain level of self-confidence in what I can do, doesn't mean there's not someone out there that can do it better than me. So if you're running around acting like an asshole to everyone because you want to be big and bad, someone's eventually going to knock you off your pedestal. So, but if you, yeah, if you engage that mindset beforehand that I just don't need to go out and just test whether or not I'm badder than somebody else, and, yeah, and just accept the fact that someone out there is going to kick my ass eventually, then you don't go out there and pull, bully your way through life. And you actually, right, stop and say, this is not worth the ass kicking I may get if I engage this person. Because I may, he may be smaller than me. He may be weaker looking than me. But this dude may be like a Golden Gloves boxing champ. And friggin' I walk up to say something, and next thing you know, I'm on the ground. And I just made being an SF guy look like being an SF guy who got beat up by a friggin' twig. So it's common sense and self-awareness that you don't have to constantly spend your life trying to reestablish your own self-worth. Get happy with who you are. Accept the fact that you're not the best person in the entire world. And be happy with it. Just do good things and live a life that doesn't have any implication to make other people's lives miserable.
Amen.
Amen.
So with that, I think that wraps it up. I mean, I think we started off talking about gun control, and we ended up talking about just being a good human being.
That's all that really matters, isn't it?
And I think if if we could all just figure out how to do that, I think gun control conversation would be a moot point, wouldn't it?
I agree.
All right. So, folks, thanks for – I think we should probably do something like this on a more regular basis. I like getting everybody together as a team on to discuss a topic, hearing different points of view. It's kind of essentially what we do anyway. But thank you guys for your time. Thanks, Jeff, for recommending the topic and everyone else for their time hopping on today. And hey, folks, if you like this show, do us a favor. Head on over to changeyourpov.com and check out all of the other amazing shows on the Change Your POV podcast network. And go to iTunes. Leave us an honest rating and review. Let us know what you think of the show. Subscribe to any of your podcast players of choice. And if you got any comments of your own and you want to engage in the conversation, you can also find us over on Facebook at Change Your POV Squad or Change Your POV Podcast Network page. All right, folks. Any last words from you guys on the call?
I think we said not for me.
I was going to say, if you're going to engage with us, be a decent human being.
Yes.
Yeah, name calling won't be. I won't even respond to people who want to start emotional interactions. So.
All right. With that, folks, I will talk to you next time.